Okay, good morning. Excuse me. Good morning, one and all. Good to see you all. This morning's learning is sponsored by Edith Rhoda Wagner in observance of the Shloshim of Ed's brother, Irving Wagner, Yisrael ben Ephraim Halevi, Olav Shalom, Behiz Neshama, Havan Aliyah. May you only know Nechama. And I wish you and the entire family only comfort in the days to come. Thank you. Our learning this morning is in your brother's memory, and may his memory continue to be a blessing. So we turn to Daf Chaf Dalet today. We are edging closer and closer to the end of this perek and the end of the Masechta writ large, so we are in a good place and doing well. Last week we had, on Daf Chaf Gimel, three stories essentially, and I thought it would take us 20 minutes, and it took us over an hour. So today we have 13 stories, and I'm not going to take any guess at how long it will take, because I'll get myself in trouble. But my sense is this morning we'll move faster, because the theme today is a little different. There was a lot of expounding to do on each story last week, which communicated the basic lesson once more, that if we want to understand how providence works, it is not arbitrary, it is not based on divine preference that he issues providence, that I like this person. There tends to be rules, and the rules tend to be, if you're worthy, if you're a good person, God will offer you providence. The theme today is 13 stories where that doesn't always pan out, where there seems to be cases of figures who are not deeply pious, or who express what we would call moral misgivings, and yet God still seems to respond well, and figures who are deeply pious who God does not respond to. And there'll be one moment where there's an interesting exchange where one rabbi prays for rain doesn't come, and all his students, instead of saying, "Don't worry, Rabbi, it's okay," say, "Well, I don't know if you know this, but when Rabbi Yehuda prayed, the rain came." At which point he is a little taken aback. He says, "Well, what do you want them to do? If you think that they were better at learning than us, we learn so much more than them. And if you think that they were more pious than us, what do we do that's not pious? So what can we do?" Sometimes you just live in an age when providence doesn't really work, which is kind of the pivot in the middle of this daf, carries us on to the next page. But there are many stories of piety, and as we speak, I imagine many are exchanging stories of piety with the funeral this morning with Chaim Kanievsky in Israel, that I know has registered for a lot of people as being a very significant moment in Jewish history, a figure of immense learning. There's been a lot of discussion online. Out of interest, raise of hands if you've heard of Rav Chaim Kanievsky before Friday. Okay, interesting. I wouldn't have guessed that necessarily. But it's interesting, a lot of back and forth has been happening online as to whether he was a leader, because in a sense he wasn't really a public persona. He didn't come out with pronouncements, he didn't stand and lead an institution. He was an incredibly quiet, reclusive figure who lived a life of private piety. But he issued a lot of response to people, and a lot of people, I remember when I was in yeshiva, they took us on a trip to come and see him and kind of sit in the room with him. But he was more of a scholar than a leader, you'd say, and he was kind of an embodiment of Torah. People have been publishing his daily schedules a lot. And all this stuff, I imagine, he would have said, "Please stop doing that," and telling everybody, but to the extent that it inspires people to have more productive days, I guess it's helpful. And the understanding is, he did a siyum. People would always say, "I'm Kol HaTorah Kulah," every year. I don't know how you define Kol HaTorah Kulah, but they put out a schedule. He would do Bavli, Yerushalmi, Shulchan Aruch, Rambam, Tosefta, Mishnah once a year, which seems quite an accomplishment. So we recognize his passing, and it is a sad day. Somebody on Friday said, "Oh, he passed away. It's bad news for Israel." I would say, you know, if he was 19... I would feel like something is rumbling. But at 94, I think we can recognize that it's a change of an era and the passing of a giant. And as we'll see through this page, we don't have to read in any extra anxieties on top of what we have, other than to say that, yes, we're moving into a new age where we don't have the same number of connections to the old world, where his father-in-law, if I'm not mistaken, was the Chazon Ish. His father was a Stipler Gaon, his father-in-law was Rav Eliashiv. So you don't have those combinations in the same way, but we'll see new leaders emerge in different molds in the coming years. So let us turn to the Daf. Daf Chaf Dalet Amud Aleph. For those of you who have Gemara, like a physical Gemara, we require the bottom line of the previous page, Kaf Gimel Amud Bet, which describes the last, the beginning of the first tale for today, speaking of Rav Yossi Bar Rav Avin. And it says, Rav Yossi Bar Rav Avin used to learn with a teacher, with Rav Yossi de Min Yukrat, but he left learning with him and he went to study with Rav Ashi. So we're told there were two sages, one of whom was a mentor and used to teach, and the other was a student, and eventually one day he changed institutions. I'm sure many of us have either ourselves or know people who have in the midst of an educational program switched classes, switched teachers, switched institutions. So that's what's happened here. Yomacha, top of the page on Chaf Dalet. One day, Shmai de Kargaris, he was listening to what was being taught in the institution. Amar Shmuel, and Shmuel said, Hashola dag min hayam b'Shabbat. If somebody takes a fish out of the water on Shabbat, what would be the problem taking a fish out of water on Shabbat?
Killing
a fish. That's one of the 39 melachot is killing. Netilat neshama. Taking away its soul. Kivin shiyavish bokasela chayiv. How do you define when a fish is dead? I mean, when it stops moving, that's clearly reached a point. Is it possible that it's dead and it's still moving? Doctors in the room? Yeah, you can have... Right, so it could be, you know, in theory, it could be running around like a headless chicken and still moving around. So how do you define when you've, you know, if you're playing with a fish, I mean, I wouldn't recommend this regularly, how do you define when you've been transgressed? Kivin shiyavish bokasela chayiv. Since as soon as the coin worth of its skin has dried out, we basically presume that it's dead. And at that point, you've been over. And if you throw it back in and it starts moving again, so it's a miracle, basically, but you've transgressed. Amalei and Rav Yossi Bar Avin responded to this teaching of Shmuel. He said, "Velema mar ben sampira." If you have to say not just that it dries out, because dry skin on the fish, that's normal. It comes out, it's going to dry off quite quickly. But it has to be between the fins; it starts drying out internally. That's when you're chayv. Amalei, and he responded, "Lo savel amar dehi Rav Yossi Bar Avin." Don't. Why don't you say who you're quoting when you say that? That's of Rav Yossi Bar Avin. He said, "Oh well, since you mention it, ananihu, yeah, that's me. I'm not going to quote myself. That is my view, and it's consistent. I just said it." Amalei, he said, "Well, how can that be you? Obviously, I don't have your Facebook page. I don't recognize you. I haven't seen your ad before." He says, "V'loy kamid Rabbi Yosef ben Yinkrat havashchich mar." But didn't you used to learn Rabbi Yosef ben Yinkrat? You know, didn't you used to go to the other school? What are you doing here? Amalei, he said, "Yeah, I did go to the other school." Amalei, my time shavke ma'vata acha. So why did you leave and come here? Amalei, gavra da'al brave al barte lochas ali didi chay chas. The man who doesn't have mercy on his own son and daughter, you think he's going to have mercy on me? I left because he was quite a harsh figure. And I thought I would die if I stayed there, so I had to leave. So the Gemara doesn't leave you hanging in suspense. They say, hold on a minute, what happened with the son and daughter? And this is the first episode where we're going to see providence responding to what we might think as impiety. Not that he did anything strictly immoral, but he seems incredibly harsh in a way that we would not advocate. And if you look at the commentaries to this and you listen to the Daf Yomi Shirim of the last few years with the people who are most pervasive in their Daf Yomi Shirim, everyone says, I don't really know what to make of this. There's obviously a deeper meaning. Let's move on. Because we don't want to criticize sages. And also, God responds to the sage. So God must have seen something that we don't see. I think this is part of the larger theme that sometimes we don't understand providence. And this isn't to say that he was a bad person. It's not to say that this is how we should behave. That this is part of weaving the 13 stories over this page where we can't always identify why providence works the way it does. And we can't always read into providence that we should emulate the way the person who was responded to behaves. Bray my high. What happened with his son that you say the Rav Yossi Bar Avin decided to leave? Yomachad, one day, Hava Igrele Igiri Bedavra. One day, Rav Yossi de Min Yukrat, of Yukrat, he hired some workers to work in the field. Nagalahu, night came, below Atila Riften, they didn't have any food. And, you know, they would have day workers. They'd come for the day, and it would be understood. You'd provide them a meal in the middle of the day. He was gone for the day, and they didn't have any food. Amar le lebrei, so they said to his son, Kafinan, you know, we're really hungry. Can we eat? The son didn't have access to food. He didn't have people on call that he could bring in. So havayatve tuta to enter. They were sitting underneath a fig tree. Amar, and he said, te'ena, te'ena, hotsi perotecha, so he just said to the fig tree, this is all I got. Fig tree, please produce your fruit. And, you know, in the middle of February, figs don't grow until April. And he's saying, please produce your fruit so my father's workers can eat. At this point, the workers are thinking, oh gosh, this guy's gone crazy. What's he doing? Afiku va'achlu. It suddenly produced figs. And they started eating. They think, whoa, this guy's great. In the meantime, the father, Rav Yosef ben Yitzchak, arrived. And we've already been told they didn't have mercy on his son. So we're now held literarily, this is narratively woven, in a way to create suspense. We're thinking, what is the father going to do? Amalahu, and he says to the workers, Lo tingtu b'day taichu, please don't harbor any doubts about me, don't hold any judgment against me. B'day denagna, and the reason it's night, and I've only just arrived, I'm mitzvah tarachna, I was involved in a mitzvah, but hash to hit the sagai, and it kept me busy until now. Amrulay, and the workers said to him, oh, don't worry, you know, really, you're fine. Rachmana lishbacha ki hachi lishbach barach. May God satisfy you in the way your son satisfied us. Meaning your son just said, tain and tain, and it started growing figs. So may God give you the kind of bounty that we got. At which point he goes, what are you talking about? What my son been doing? What are you, Amalu mehecha, what are you talking about? Where did my son get anything for? Amru hachi vahachi evamasa. And they said, oh, well, this is what happened. He said to the fig tree, grow. And the fig tree grew. Amalo, and he says now to his son, Bini, my son, you bother God to make figs come not in their right time? Yes, Afshalab Ismano, may he gather you not in your right time. Yeah, and then his son passed away, according to the commentaries, which is seen as lochas, merciless to some degree. Is that something one admires in parenting? I would say, if you ask the average person today, the answer would probably be no. I assume parenting attitudes have changed over time. People were more strict in different ages. There were eras in human history where, I understand, people did not develop close bonds with children until they got to age 6 or 7, understanding that infant mortality was incredibly high, and emotionally it would have been overwrought to develop close relationships with young children. So it could be there's an age in which this resonated as this is an appropriate parenting, but it's not really compassionate. You know, this is woke to think that this is a problem. But I think most of us would read this and empathize with Yosef Bar Avin, who says, you know what, I better get out of here, because one day I might say something and think I'm doing the right thing, and he's going to say, why are you doing that? And then, you know, bye to me. And if you think that was a little discompassionate to his son did something, right? His son, you know, you could say, you know, you could imagine a kid going into a parent's bank account, taking out all the money and giving it to the workers and say, you know, what are you doing? That's my bank account. You know, you treat my bank, you get my money before you deserve it, you should go before. You know, there was something he did. But what happens with his daughter is even more harsh. Barte Mahai, what happened to his daughter? Havyele Barte Balat Yofi. He had a beautiful daughter. She was aesthetically very attractive. Yomachad, one day, Chazilehu Gavra, Rabbi Yosef ben Yitzchak, saw a person, Dave Kari Behutzava Kachazile. He saw a man making a hole in a fence and looking through and staring at his daughter. Voyeurism. As a parent, as a father, what might you respond to this scene? Maybe stop looking at my daughter, or maybe, you know, cover the hole, or, you know, report him to the police. That's something. Amalo, so this father says to this voyeur looking through the fence, my high, what are you up to? Amale Rebbe says, Rebbe, imla lochalo zachiti, look, I'm not going to marry her. You know, I'm not going to merit to marry her. Lera'otu la'asla, can I at least have a look? To which he responds, Amala, he says to his daughter, Biti, my daughter, kama tsarat lehu lebraita. You are paining people. You're so beautiful that people are paining to look at you, and you're ruining their moral, upstanding nature. Shuvila afrach v'alishlu be'ech b'nei adam. Return to the dust and don't trip up people anymore. And it seems, again, the commentaries add in, and she passed away. At which point we can now understand why Rabbi Yossi Bar Avin said, I'm going to maybe switch schools, because this seems like this is not my life expectancy might go up if I switch schools. And again, this is the first tale where we have Providence responding. He says may your time come early, or he says, return to the dust, and it happens. So a neutral observer would say, providence is working, that seems to be the way to behave, maybe we need to be more strict. But this is the first story in the context of a number of stories where it's just unfathomable how providence works. And we shouldn't read it, and there are people in the world who do seem to succeed. Without making everything hyper-contemporary or making everything simplistic, if this week at some point, you know, partially the world has mustered around Ukraine and they seem to be defying all expectations. And I'm sure at some subconscious level, many of us feel like God's on Ukraine's side. And that's why they're succeeding here. So what happens come Wednesday? We're hearing the Russians are making incremental advances. Come Wednesday, let's say they've got Kyiv. They've bombed out theaters and schools, and Putin has now put someone in place. So God now favors Putin. Providence we tend to associate with being on our side as long as we're winning. And then we get in trouble when we stop winning. And his suggestion is, again, in the context of these stories, we don't know how to read it. And sometimes it goes in our favor and sometimes it doesn't. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't aspire to behave morally, because sometimes it does happen, and either way, that's how we should live. Havilehu Chamra, and this figure of Yosef ben Yarkat, who we said was a little bit harsh toward his own children, there's an extra story to finish off his biography. He had a donkey, Kedahavu Igrele Kolyoma, and he would rent it out every day, meaning like he had a car, and he would rent it out every day. People would use it, La'orto, and at night, Havu Mashle Igra Agaba, and at night, people would put the rent inside on the donkey to go home to the master, and it would go home. So like they'd leave the rent in the glove compartment and you pick up the car in the evening. But if you put too much money or too little money, you put the wrong rent on the donkey wouldn't move. And the suggestion here, he was so pious that his donkey would only go home if the payment was right, in both directions. And this to some degree seems like a little addendum, but it is suggesting that it wasn't like he was narcissistic, otherwise it would say if you put too little, it wouldn't go home. Put too much, the donkey would say, all right, too much, I'll take too much. But the answer is he was extremely exacting. Figs shouldn't grow before figs should grow. People shouldn't be more beautiful than they are. Nothing should draw attention. And donkeys should only come if you pay exactly right. And I'm not taking more, and I'm taking less. And it was that exactitude that defines his persona. And we're going to see how exacting this was. Yomachad, one day, in Shizuga de Sandale Allah, somebody rented the donkey, but at the end of the day, they'd accidentally left their sandals on the back of the donkey, meaning they'd put the right rent on, but their donkeys had been left on the saddle. Velo Azla, and it wouldn't move. Adishaklinu minava hadar Azla, until they took the sandals off, and the donkey said, okay, now I can go, because if I take the sandals with, you're paying too much, there's too much worth on here. So you get the sense that it was a strict exactitude on his part that defined his character. That maybe in some ways plugged him in to how to access providence. But there are costs to that kind of exactitude, certainly in terms of maintaining your student population or the next generation. Next story, Elazar Ishbirta. This is a figure, Elazar Ishbirta, again, who was deeply pious, but not living in a way that many of us would say we should follow as an ideal. And he is not as severe to his children, but he lives in a very strict way. And this figure, when the charity... Now, usually, somebody who is in fundraising would say, I love people who give me money, and I seek out people who give me money. But this figure was so pious that the people who collected funds tried to avoid him because they felt like it was exploitation. Because every time they saw him, they knew he didn't have a lavish life. And every time they saw him, he would say, oh, what have I got? What have I got? And give him everything. Let me write a check. And they said, please stop. I'm collecting for charity. I don't want to come next week and collect for you. Stop giving. So the Gabai Sadaka would see him, have a tashimine, and they would avoid him. The Kolmai to have a Gabai Yavlu, because everything he had, he would give to them. Yomachad, one day, have a Salik Lashuka. He went to the market. Lemizben Ladunya Labarte. His daughter was getting married, and he went to go and purchase a dowry for his daughter. And the charity collectors were in the market. They were doing a fundraising day, and they saw him. They said, guys, pack it up. Let's go. He's coming. Just give the guys some peace. But he saw them, and he ran after them. Amalu, and he said, he said, no, no, no. Tell me, what are you collecting for? I adjure you, please. Tell me, what are you collecting for today? So they said, look, I'm not going to lie. You were collecting for an orphan and an orphaness. We're taking for two children who need money who don't have parents. Amalan, and he said, Ha'avoda, surely, Shen Kodrim Leviti, They come before my daughter because my daughter has a father. I'm here to buy something for my daughter, but they don't have parents. So let me give money and my daughter will figure it out. Shakal kolda hava bahadeva yavlu. So he took everything he had on him and he gave it to the charity collective. Pashlei chad zuza, he was left with essentially one zuz. He left with $1 in the pocket. What's he going to do with his $1? So zavan lechiti va'asik shadoku bakalva, he bought one grain of wheat. And when he got home, he put it in the, where'd you put wheat?
Wheat
holder. Yeah, he put it in the wheat holder. He put it in the granary. Atai dvitu, and his wife came, who had sent him to the marketplace with all their savings and said, we need to pay for a wedding. If you could buy something for the wedding, that'd be helpful. Amrala labarte, and I guess she understood that she should ask the daughter rather than him, because, you know, what's dad done today? Says to the daughter, Ma iti avuch, what has your father brought home? The daughter doesn't want to get in the middle of this. So Amrala, she says to her mother, Kol ma da iti baklava shadite. Everything he bought, he put in the granary. You want to check it out? Go check it out. I'm not getting involved. Achala miftach bava de kava. She came to the granary door. Chaza akalba de malyachite. She saw that it was so full of wheat, v'kan nafka b'tzinura de dasha, that the wheat was coming out of the hinges of the door. V'lo miftach bava mechide. She couldn't open the door. It was so full of grain. She thinks, wow, he got a great deal at the market today. That's what the wife thinks. Azla barte, but the daughter knows that he came home with one grain. So azla barte lebe midrasha. So the daughter runs to the bet midrash. Amrelein, she says to the father, Ba'urei, come and see. Masala avach, come and see what the person who loves you has done. Meaning, come and see what God has done for you. Because God loves you so much. You're willing to give everything away and God gives you everything. So what's his response at this point? Say again. Right, you think you go, cha-ching, great, it's paid off my life of piety. No, Amala, he says, Avoda, Harihin Hekdesh Alech. It is considered sacred, this. It's come from God. Ve'enlach ben elakechad mani Yisrael. And the only share you have in it is like an impoverished person of Israel. Which is meaning to say, you're entitled to some of it because we're poor, but no more than anybody else poor in the neighborhood. Don't think we've won the lottery. Think, oh, we now have at our disposal the collection for the masses of poor. So you're entitled to some, whatever we need, but the rest of it's going away. So here we've got a slightly more admirable figure, but still living in a way which, in terms of halachic norms, we don't advise. There is a limit on the amount of charity one is permitted to give away. Actually, in the context of Ukraine giving, Rav Shachter was recorded on video by one of the organizations last week, and he mentioned this, that usually we say when it's for a mitzvah, a fifth of one's money or income is the upper cap one is permitted to give away. If you're talking about redeeming captives, he said, or saving lives, it's obviously not quite a cap, but one should be conscientious that one shouldn't impoverish oneself. And here, Eliezer Ishberta seems to fly in the face of that norm, and yet God is giving him all this material. So again, looking at this, you might conclude we ought to live this way, and the fact that we don't is because we make a concession to our weakness, and we're not on that level. But in the larger context, the suggestion here is that this is exceptional, not exceptional in the this is a model exception, but this is an unusual way to live. And we can't always understand how providence works. And guess what? For this one story, there were probably a million stories of people who lived this way, and the granaries didn't get filled up by God, and they ended up starving. So this is a story to suggest sometimes this happens, and we shouldn't write it off, but we also shouldn't write it up as a kind of exemplar for how we all should live. Rabbi Nasiya happened with Rabbi Yehuda, the prince. Rabbi Anasi responsible for redacting the Mishnah, hugely influential rabbinic figure. Gaza Tanita by Rachme, he decreed a fast and he prayed for mercy, meaning he asked for rain. Velo Achimitra, but rain didn't come. And this is going to be the first, not in a row, but the first on our daf of three stories where prayer failed to elicit rain, but it was the failure of the prayer that led to despair that led to rain. Meaning standing and praying didn't work, but once they realized their prayer didn't work, they became so upset by their inability to move God, that their upset caused the rain to fall. And we're going to have that happen three occasions on the duff. So Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya, and again, this is Rabbi Anasi, and if his prayer wasn't able to elicit rain, we can understand that not all prayers are going to work at all times in all contexts. Gaza Tanibar, Rachma Vilata Mitch, rain didn't come. Amma, and he said, Kama Ikim Shmuel Haramati Elud Ben Gamli. He says, look at the gap between Shmuel, the prophet, And Reuben Gamliel, calling himself, he was the son of Gamliel, he says, look, Shmuel in his age, he called out for rain in Ramah and it started raining. I've been crying, of course, called for a fast, I've been praying, nothing happens. Oy lo ledor shekein nitka. Woe to a generation like this. Oy lo lemish alta biyamav kach. And woe to the person who this happens to. Meaning saying woe to himself, woe to everybody. This is terrible. Chalash date, he became weakened. Vata mitra, and then it started to rain. Suggesting that moral humility is in many ways elicits God's response more than prayer. Which is part of that larger theme that prayer is not a way of enticing God as a mean of personal preference, but it's actually how we behave that elicits God's response, which is in contradistinction to the behaviors we've just seen, which sets it up as a contrast. Say again? Yeah, it could be a combination that you pray and then recognizing that prayer doesn't always work. So there's a theology that I'm praying to God, so I know my destination, but I recognize that I don't have the power to persuade God. And it's that combination of knowing I depend on God and that God doesn't always respond to me that leads to this response. Debe Nasiya, there was one time where the house of the prince, meaning the head, the chief rabbinate of the age, let's say, Gazat Tanita, they decreed a fast. V'lo adinu l'Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, and they didn't tell Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. They just didn't get the word around. They said, okay, fast day tomorrow, and they didn't inform the big sages of the day the night before. L'tzafra, in the morning, odienu, they told them in the morning, amalei Reish Lakish Rabbi Yochanan, and they said to each other, halo kablinu alam yarte, we didn't accept the fast last night. You know, imagine you wake up in the morning and an email chain has gone round and we've said, oh, today is a fast day, we ordered it, started last night. And you're going to say, well, I had a big dinner last night. I woke up 10 minutes ago. I had breakfast. My email just came through. What am I meant to do? So the response, Rabbi Yochanan responds, Anan batrau garinan, we follow in their wake. Meaning, don't think that we deserve to be told separately. We're under their auspices. They decreed a fast. We should follow the fast. And continuing in a similar vein, Debe Nasiya, once the prince's house, Gaza Ta'anit of Lota Mitra, they said, let's have a fast day. Rain didn't come. And this is where we can see another dynamic playing out where rain does not come, but the way people behave suggests how we ought to behave. Tanulu Oshia Zeira Min Chavre, the young upstart of the group, the youngest of the sages at the time, comes along and offers a teaching and says, oh, if the chief rabbinate orders a fast day, and you can imagine this happening, chief rabbinate of Israel orders a fast day, no rain comes. What is the average person going to say in response? It didn't work, and why wouldn't it work? Yeah, chief rabbinate, they're corrupt anyway. Oh, what do they know? You know, if it doesn't rain, probably they don't deserve it. So here we don't have the masses saying that. We have the youngest person of the sages saying, look, if this isn't working, who else are we going to blame? It's you, my friends, at the top. And he says, let me tell you a teaching. Comes from a verse in Bamidbar that talks about if the people do something improper, there's a korban, and it says, if me'enei ha'idah, from the eyes of the congregation, something is hidden. What's the eyes of the congregation? He says, the eyes of the congregation in context is talking about the leaders. Why are they called the eyes of the congregation? Now he's going to give a mashal. Mashal, it's a parable, a kala for a bride, shehibu be'daviyah, when she's at home. Meaning, in the context, when you're thinking about shiduchim and matches, you know, think of a profile picture. And you're going to look at a potential candidate one way or other. It says for a kala who's at home, and you're trying to assess whether she would be a good match for one son. Kolzman sheinei yafot. If she's got good eyes, en kol gufa tzricha bedika. You don't need to see the rest of her. Good eyes is all you need. Now, this could be read in a very superficial level that this is saying if someone's got attractive eyes, you don't need to see the rest of their figure because that's all you need in a relationship: attractive eyes. If this is read more metaphorically, that if she's got a generous outlook, meaning she's got good eyes, so then I don't need to see the rest of her resume, because if she's generous and she's attentive, that's all I need. That's all I can do with it. Ene trutot kol gufa tzricha bedika. But if she's got weak eyes, a trutot, then you've got to check out the rest of her figure or the rest of her character. Atu avdei, which is his way of saying, that's a mashal, meaning eyes are all that's important. If you've got good eyes, that's all you need. If they're bad eyes, you need to check everything out. So if the chief rabbinate decrees a fast and it doesn't work, who the ene ha'ida? The leaders, the eyes are bad, you're in trouble. So at this point, everyone's listening, and he's sitting there being interviewed by the press, and they say, you know, oh, young master sage, why do you think the fast didn't work? And he says, well, let me tell you a parable. If the eyes don't work, nothing works. And you know who the eyes are, right? They're the people in charge. So at this point, everyone's listening, and the chief rabbi's attendants hear this, and they're thinking, he's going after the chief rabbi. So what, in a civilized society, would you do to this guy on the news? You do your own interview. What would you do if you were not so inclined to be quite so civilized? Let's say you're in, you know, Putinist Russia or Iran. What might you do? Take his head off. So let's see what they do. Atu Avdei, the servants of the house of the Nasi come along. Varamile Sidura Batsavre, they put a scarf around his neck. The Kamasarule, and they start hurting him. So you can imagine on the news, like, I'm not sure you're helping your case. You're strangling the guy. And he just said, you're not leading a very upright system. Amru and everybody, Bnei Mata, everybody comes along and says, everyone in the city comes along. Dahanami Mistar Olan says, no, look, he's upsetting us too. He's offending the chief rabbi. We're upset about it. He's causing aspersions on the rest of the people. But Kivn Dechazin and Kamila Shem Shemayim, but he means well. He's trying to say something, L'shem Shemayim, like Amri Le Midi. We don't say anything to him. Shavkin Le, Atu Nami Shavku. Just leave him alone. Look, he's a troublemaker. He's saying things he shouldn't say. It's improper, but look. He means well, which is, it injects into conversation the import of intention. If someone says something offensive, sometimes it can be deeply hurtful. And one should consider, though, does this person mean it as an aggressive act of hostility? Or they really deep down mean, you know, if you were better, this wouldn't happen. And they're not just saying it to dig you, but they really meant, you know, if you were better, God would help us. At that point, you can still be offended and think it's crazy, but leave them alone. You know, they mean well. Okay. Rebbe Gaza Tanit V'Lo Mitra. One point, Rebbe. Who's Rebbe? Usually Rebbe's Rebbe Yonasi as well. So Rebbe wants decreed a fast. V'Lo Mitra, rain didn't come. Nachit Kame Ilfa. Suddenly Ilfa, V'Amrile Rebbe Ilfi, and some people say it's Rebbe Ilfi who came along. And remember who Ilfa is from a previous story involving boats and masts? Yeah, right. It was Ilfa and his friend Rabbi Yochanan who were sitting together eating. They were about to go into a business venture, and then one Rabbi Yochanan heard the angel saying, "Should we knock the wool on them because they're about to give up Torah?" And Rabbi Yochanan says, "Oh, that's not good." And he realized that Ilfa didn't hear the angel, so he goes to learn. Ilfa goes into business. Rabbi Yochanan becomes the head of the institution. Ilfa comes back, and they say, "You know, Ilfa, if you hadn't gone into business, you'd be better than him." And then he hangs off a boat and says, "Yeah, well, test me. If I get it wrong, I'll jump off." At which point they say, that's a little extreme, we were just making a comment, but it turns out tested him and he knew what he was doing. So at this point, Rebbe made a fast day, nothing happened. Ilfa comes along, some people say it wasn't Ilfa, it was Ilfi, Rebbe Ilfi. Amon, he said, Mashiv HaRuach, and as soon as he said those two words, may the winds blow, the gale started. V'nasa Zika, it started blowing. Morid HaGeshem, and he said, may the rain fall, and rain fell. And this is to articulate that he was incredibly effective. Rebbe says a fast day, they're praying, they're crying, nothing happens. Then Ilfa comes on and he says, Mashiv HaRuach, Morid HaGeshem, and it just starts. Mayuvdach, and they turn around to Ilfa and say, what do you do that warrants this? And again, that recurrent phrase, what do you do, is an indication there must be some reason God is responding. It can't just be that you've got special powers, you know the force, there's got to be somewhere you live that dictates this. Amaleni responds, Diyarna Bekusta Dechika, I live in an impoverished town. And they don't have wine for Kiddush and Avdallah. Tarachna v'etinu chamer l'kiddush v'avdallah. And I bring them wine for Kiddush and Avdallah. Mafkinu lo yidei chavatayu, so they can fulfill their obligation, which we refer to every Shabbos when we say Misha Berach. For everyone who brings yain l'kiddush l'avdallah, people bring wine for Kiddush and Avdallah, which is seen as difficult to source. And he said, I would provide that. And that's why I say, Mashiv haruch min hageshem, it just happens because I provide for the poor. Rav ikla lo atra. Rav once visited a place, this is about six lines up, first one is Lehahu, Gaza Tanita, and he decreed a fast. Lo Atamitra, no rain came. Nachit Kame Shlicha Ditzibor, suddenly, and this is an unnamed person, stands up and says, Mashiv HaRuach, it starts blowing wind, Marid HaGeshem V'Atamitra. It's not even Ilfa, I don't know who this guy is. He stands up and he says, Mashiv HaGeshem, and it starts raining. So Rav says, Mayuvdach, what do you do that this is the response you get? Amalei says, Mikri Dardike Ana. I teach Torah to children. Umakrina livni aniye kibni atire. And I teach the poor children like I teach the rich children, meaning no tuition blocks. If you If someone wants to learn, they come and learn. If someone wants, they can't afford, I don't take anything from them. And in addition to having an economic accessible policy where anybody can come and learn, I also have a flexible disciplinary policy. Vitle Piri de Kavre, and I've got a fish pond full of koi, I was going to say fish, full of koi. V'chol man de pasha, and anybody, any kid who misbehaves, I don't know how many of you either had children who misbehaved or themselves misbehaved in school. I spent quite a lot of time near what you'd call the principal's office, and they didn't bribe me with anything. V'chol man de pasha, and anyone who misbehaved, mashchadina le minayhu, I would bribe them with the fish. Meaning the fish was seen as a delicious thing. You know, when you walk into a seafood place and they got the fish in the tank and you pick, I don't think that ever happens, you pick a fish. I think that probably happens with lobsters. In Chicago, the store, they used to have like a thing of lobsters and you'd pick, and it always feels like, I don't want to pick what I'm going to eat, just put it on a plate and pretend it wasn't alive at any point. But they would bribe the misbehaving kids with one of these fish, mustardinan lay, and we'd prepare it for them. If I seen an lay, we'd appease them, I'd cry until they would come and read. So he says, I recognize that there are blocks for people's study. And as a teacher, I make sure no one is blocked because of finances, as no one's blocked because of personality. And I find a way to make sure those who can't afford to come, come. And those who don't have focus, I find a way to give them focus. And that's why God responded to me, says this nameless, anonymous Shlich Tzibur. Rav Nachman goes to Tanid. Rav Nachman decreed a fast by Rachman v'lo Trimitri. He said, may that, you know, please rain. And rain didn't come. And Rav Nachman, who you put yourself on the line, which is sometimes why, you know, something happens, rabbis can occasionally be hesitant to say, let's have a big prayer gathering. Because what happens if you all get together and you all have a big Tehillim rally, nothing happens. Everybody feels terrible, it didn't work. The people who organized it looked pretty bad, we put this together, nothing happened. So Rav Nachman organized this big fast, nothing happened, and he said, Shaklua la Nachman, throw Rabbi Nachman, chavutim in gudula ara, off the top of the building to the floor. I mean, he felt so dreadful. He said, everybody come and pray. And you know this works. That Shlich Tzibur from that city got rain to come, so let's all come together and we'll make it rain. Nothing. He says, just throw Nachman off the building. I think, you know, people who say, you know, I want the floor to swallow me up. This is what he's saying. I felt terrible. Chalash date va'ata mitri. He became weak. And then it rained. So this is the second time where it's not the actual prayer, but it's the recognition that it doesn't always work effectively that led him to cause providence to function. Rabba Gaza Ta'anit, and this is the story I referenced right at the start, take us over the page, where Rabba says, look, sometimes you can't explain why things work and why they don't. He decreed a fast by Rachman, he begged for mercy. Vlawatamitra, rain didn't come. Amarulay, his students said to him, as we said, very thoughtful students, Rabbi Yehuda kiavagazatinit amitra, when Rabbi Yehuda decreed a fast, it rained. So what's wrong with you, Rabba? Why didn't it fast when you did it? Ha, Rabba, ha? And the truth is, we could see these as less than sensitive students, or we could see them as regular, you know, high school students. This is what people do. When the Rebbe says something, it's not to be mean. They're like, we don't understand. When this rabbi did it, it worked. Why doesn't it work? And it's not saying you're a bad person. It's saying we don't understand providence. You obviously do. Explain to us why this didn't work. And his response is, Amalahu, last line, third word. He says to them, my Avid, what can I do? Imashim Tanui, if it's going to be, it's all based on scholarship. Who knows more? Ananadifinan minahu, we're better than them. So the age of Rabbi Yehuda, they got rain to come, and we don't. We'd learn much better than them. And I've heard rabbis, scholars, Talmidei Chachamim over time make remarks like this. Rav Shechter, when I was in Israel, at one point observed, you know, my grandparents, he would say, were more pious than we are, but we're more learned than we are. You know, he would say, I know a lot more than my grandparents did, but, you know, there was a piety to them. How you define that, obviously, is a challenge. But he said, look, we are... He would say, more corrupted by contemporary age, and they lived more simply, and they had more faith, and they were more kind of innocent than we are, but we know more than them. And he's about to say something similar. We know more than them, says Rabbah, de Bishani de Rabbi Yehuda, because in the age of Rabbi Yehuda, Kol Tanui, all their teaching was Benezikin Hava. They only did Bava Batra, Bava Metziah, Bava Kama. That's what they did every year. So they had a cycle where they would only do Nezikin, civil damages. Va'anan kamat ninan b'shitin sidrin. But we learn all six orders of the Mishnah. We do zvachim, we do gittin, we do all these complicated, we do yuvamot as they're doing dafyomi. And they just did civil law they were very limited. For example, he says, when Yehuda would get up to Uksin, which is the very last Masechet of Mishnah, which it turns out is not in Ezekiel, but he says, when they would get to that Mishnah, for example, like the Mishnah that discusses a woman preserving vegetables in a pot, all the Mishnah that talks about olives being preserved with their leaves. And again, if we were just focusing on these three lines, we could spend a lot of time talking about the symbolism of why these Mishnahs are mentioned. But the general principle is, Rabbi Yehuda would get up to these complicated Mishnahs in Uksin, and what would he say? Amre, he would say, Havin de Ravu Shmuel kachazina hach. He says, oi, we need the, you know, this is rocket science, basically. He's saying we need the insight of Rav and Shmuel just to get through this. He would look at relatively straightforward Mishnayot, says Rabbah, and he would respond by saying, you know, I need an Einstein to get through this. But what about us? We teach that in 13 different schools, which is equivalent of saying 300 years ago, Jewish education, they spent a lot of time on how to read, and they would kind of break their teeth in Mishnayot. Now we've got art scrolls, and we've got Korans, and schools where people are not spending all day learning can have more proficiency in Talmud than people who spend the whole day on it, because we've got the curricula, we've got teaching methodology, we've got everything in place. So he says, if it's just about fluency in learning, it can't be that they were better than us. We know more than them, we've got better teaching methods than them, we've got more spread than them. Ve'ilu, however, first one line is Ba'uktin, about six lines down. Ve'ilu Rabbi Yehuda ki have a shalef chad masana. But Rabbi Yehuda, all he had to do to make it rain, he took off one shoe. He just went, one shoe come off. Atimishon, it starts raining. Va'ana kesavicha kule yom avlek dishkachban. And we cry all day long, begging for rain, and we don't get anything. So he's responding, I don't know. The students say, why did it work for Rabbi Yehuda, not you? And he says, well, look, if it's about learning, we learn more than them. And he says, I'm not saying this to be pejorative. We learn more than them. All he had to do was take off a shoe, and it rained, and we don't have anything. Imashum uvda, and if you're going to tell me, well, maybe it's not about learning, maybe it's about moral rectitude, maybe it's about behavior, if that's what you're going to say, I ikka dechazimidi, if you see something wrong that we don't do or that we should do, lema, tell me. Meaning, I don't see us behaving improperly. I'm not going to say we've been more corrupted and we spend our time on Netflix instead of learning. We learn as much and we learn more and we behave just as good. So I don't understand. Aval maya asur, what can we do? Gadolei adar, shein doran derma yafe. What can the leaders of the generation do? So this is the end, kind of less celebratory note, where he said, look, you want to blame someone? We live in a bad time. It used to be, if everybody was innocent, everybody was perfect, you didn't have to be the most learned, you didn't have to be the most pious, and God would respond. But we live in an age where providence doesn't function, because we're not a great generation. Okay, and now the Gemara is going to say, hold on a minute, what's this reference to all he had to do was take off one shoe, and the rain would come? So we're now going to have from till the next, can you see the dark and green? It's not just me, right? Great. So up to the three lines up in the thin lines, that's going to be giving us the anecdote background to Rabbi Yehuda taking off a shoe. Rabbi Yehuda, and he is now going to embody that strictness that we saw earlier on with a couple of the other sages. Rabbi Yehuda chaza hanobe trei dahavakar parze berifta. Rabbi Yehuda one day was, and this takes me back to my school years as well, he saw a couple of young men throwing bread around and kind of playing around with food. At which point he said, amash ma'mina ikisavar balma. So he looks around, they're throwing bread around. What does that tell me? He says, seems like, we're in a plentiful age. And my grandmother always used to say something like that when 2008, 2009, we were going through the recession. And, we went out for someone's birthday to a restaurant and it would be like packed up to the gills. It looks like a recession in here. She'd always make that comment. So Rabbi Yehuda took a leaf out of her book or something, looked around, people are thrown around food. It says, seem to be pretty plentiful around here that these kids seem to be throwing around. Yahiv Enei. He gave his eyes, and this happens often in rabbinic episodes, there's a description of rabbis giving their eyes, which is a way of saying that they kind of applied scrutiny to the situation, and at least one context has led to the death of a fellow sage. We actually mentioned this earlier in the Masechet, where somebody was misbehaving or said something inappropriate, and one of the sages looked at them, and they became a pile of bones. So here, who did he look at? So you'd imagine he looked at the kids, but it turns out he just looked at the world. He just said, look at this. This is the culture. I'm not blaming these kids. The culture is, things are plentiful. We can throw food around. So Havakufna, suddenly a famine started. He applies scrutiny, and famine comes down. Amru le Rabbanan. And in the meantime, because these two kids were throwing bread around, everybody's now starving. So the sages' attendants came along. Amru le Rabbanan. The rabbi said, L'Rav Kahana b'Rei d'Rav Nechunya, Shamei. They said to the assistant for Rabbi Yehuda, they said to Rav Kahana, Mar d'shchich kameh, you're with him all the time. He's clearly empowered to resolve this crisis because it's because of him that it started. When you take him home out of the academy, do me a favor, bring him past the market. Because if you want to see how starved everybody is, he's going to come to the market and he'll see long lines forming by the food and he'll recognize that this is a bad time. So they said, take him out that way. So Rav Kahana did that. He took him home through the marketplace so that he would see. And as he was leaving, Ribbita was walking home and he looked around and he said, oh, well, there's a big gathering here. Kanufia, what's everyone gathering? What's the big news today in the market? Amalahu, my eyes. So he said, what's going on? Amrulay, they said to him, Akuspa de Tamre Kame, de Kamistapan. Oh, we're all standing in line because we want to buy some dates. Which one he said, oh, they were throwing bread around, you know, a few months ago. And now everyone's queuing up to buy dates. You know, imagine a line is forming so that we can buy a box of Cheerios. He'd say, we're in big trouble if that's what... Amar Shema Minah, he says, I learned from here. Kafna ba'alma, there is famine in the world. Amar Leila Shamye, so he says to his assistant, Shlufli Masane, he says, take off my shoes. And if you read this through the prism of mysticism, it might be like, oh, he thinks if I take off my shoes, it'll just magically change what's going on. But it seems that, you know, number the commentary says he's taking off his shoes. When do we take off our shoes in Jewish life?
Morning.
He's basically saying, I need to lament what's going on and hopefully turn things around. So, Shalaf Lechad Masana, one of his shoes came off, and suddenly Atam Mitra started raining. And you can imagine the whole line standing there in the scene from the end of Shawshank Redemption, when he's standing in the rain, everyone's turning up and saying, oh my gosh, it's raining, all he did was take off one shoe. Can you imagine what happens if he takes off the other shoe? What's going to happen? Everything's going to grow from the ground. It's going to be amazing. So one shoe came off, started raining. Kimata la mishle v'achrina, and the attendant went to take off his other shoe. What happened? At Eliyahu. Eliyahu turns up and says, whoa, stop. Do not take off that shoe. Because Amalei, Amakadosh Baruch, says, God said, Ishlafta achrina machravina alme. He said, if you take off that other shoe, I'm going to destroy the world. So keep the shoe on. So again, we don't have any more explanation of what that meant. So this is where the commentaries jump in, and this is where I'd invite you, if you're thinking through this story, how would you understand Eliyahu saying, God will destroy the world if you take that shoe off? And there are different ways to see it. Some ways, I think maybe it's the Koran, said that he said, if you take off that shoe, God is going to be so moved by your despair, he's just going to have to destroy the world, because this, we can't heal everything. And God is going to think you're so affected by trauma, he's just going to have to destroy everything to save you a little bit of despair. So keep that shoe on. Other views suggest that taking off one shoe stopped the famine, taking off the other shoe would create an economic boom. And he says, don't do that. That's not proper. And God will destroy the world rather than give that, because they don't deserve that. But we'll stop the famine. Different ways to read this. But either way, what we see in the plain text is there are occasions on which we seem to attach providential turns to particular sages and behaviors. Amr of Mari brought the Bishmuel, and in that context, when he took off one shoe and it suddenly started raining, Rav Mari, who was the son of the daughter of Shmuel, the grandchild of Shmuel, said, Ana havakamina agudin nar papa. I was standing on the banks of the river Papa that day when he took off his shoe. Rain started. And what happened? Chazai lamalche, I saw angels, de idmu lamalche, who were dressed up as sailors. And they were loading up bags of sand onto the ship. Who wants sand to eat? Nobody wants sand to eat. How did he know they were angels? Because of what happened next. He loaded them, and as soon as they put these bags of sand on the boat, it suddenly became grain, fine flour. So he said, so Mary says, and we're familiar with Lord of the Rings, Mary is one of the hobbits, different figure. So Rav Meri says, I was standing on the riverbank and I saw these figures standing at the side. They didn't think anyone was watching, and they were just putting sand in bags and putting on a ship and then sailing along, and it was flour. So I knew these were angels, and I knew God was saying, he's taken off one shoe, it started raining and it's coming along. But what happened at that point, Ate kule amla mizben, everybody came to buy the flour, amalahu, and Rabbi Yehuda said to them, the figure who took his shoe off, he says, no, don't buy it. Lotizm demasa nisimhu, don't buy any of this. This is miraculous stuff, and this is similar to what we saw on the previous Amud, we shouldn't benefit, you know, so the granary filled with grain, that's divine material. We shouldn't engage with that. Lamachar, and the next day, Achin Arve Dechiti de Parzina, and the next day, natural grain came through as the supply chain built up again because of the rain and the famine eased. So Rav Meri was saying, after he took off his shoe, I recognized Rabbi Yehuda telling people not to rely on miracles. So that is, again, a coda to the story that despite the fact that he could elicit providence, he said, that's not how we should operate in life. We should still try to do natural means and not benefit from Masa Nisim. Rava Ikle La Grinita. Rava visited La Hagrinya, to this place, Grinya. He decreed a fast and nothing came. He said to everybody in the town, keep fasting tonight. Because meaning, we fasted all day, nothing happened. Everyone thinks, forget it, we're going to go home and eat. He says, no, no, no. Just through the night. Just fast through the night. Lamacha the next day, Amalu, he said to the crowd, everyone came to shul for Shachris the next day. He said, Mika de Chazachil Malema. He says, anybody have a dream last night? Tell me. Before we carry on the day, if anybody had a dream last night, you should tell me. Amalahu, Rabbi Lazar Magrinya, and Rabbi Lazar of the town said, Ledidia Kreen Bachalma, I had a dream in which something was read to me, and it was Shalem Tav, Larav Tav, Merivin Tav, to Metuv Yumetiv La'ame. Oh, I mean, even if we don't know what that means, that sounds pretty good. Shalem Tav, good greetings, Larav Tav, to the good rabbi, Merivin Tav, from the great master, to Metuvye, from his good Metiv La'ame, wants to give good to the people. Basically, I had a dream that makes it sound like goodness wants to come from the good God to the good rabbi. He says, ah, this is a time of mercy, it seems. My Rachme, we should pray by Rachme, and it started raining. So Rava seems to find dreams to be a good way to determine where providence is going. And now we're going to see something where dreams come up for Rava. Again, Ahu Gavra, there was this person, Itchayv Nigda, Bebeidina, who was liable for lashes in the court. Mishum de Balkutit, because of an illicit relationship that he had. Nagde Rava, so Rava gave him the lashes, and unfortunately, occasionally this might happen. Umit, he passed away. So I don't know whether he gave too many lashes or he had some sort of reaction to it, but he passed away. At which point, we're not told what Rava felt, but presumably Rava felt, I didn't mean that to happen. Is that right? I saw yesterday, was this a dream? That I saw a headline that one of the states has just permitted firing squad for executions again? Did I just see that? Okay, may have been a dream.
There was a shul policy.
Oh, there was a shul policy. Different firing squad, I presume. I think South Carolina, check it out. I think last night they just passed a rule that firing squads are permitted again. Which is an odd thing to wake up in the morning and decide we need to do to legislate. Ishtama Miltebe Shavu Malka. The house of Shavu Malka heard what happened. And the presumption is that Shavu Malka, the Persian king, didn't think, oh, Rava killed someone by mistake, I'm going to get involved. He thought, and this is true many times in Jewish history, when we were persecuted and marginalized, Jewish courts did have the ability to... South Carolina. There you go. I don't know if it was signed into law by the governor or if it was just, who knows. But who wakes up in the morning and thinks, you know what we need? Firing squads. That's what we need. Okay. You know. Oh, that's true. Maybe. No, but they can still execute by other means. But they said, the injection, it's not doing it for us. We need a firing. We want to make other young people fire at people and live with the trauma of having shot them. That's what we need. Amar Leh. Baila Tsuri La Rava. So King Shavar heard that Rava had killed someone and he thought, he's taking the law into his own hands. You want to do civil discipline, I get that. You want to apply fines, I get that. You want to apply lashes, I get that. But the king of Persia says, no one has the right over life and death apart from me. You can't have rabbis giving out capital punishments. And he killed someone, so I'm going to get involved. By the Suri La Rava, he wanted to pain Rava for this. Get him back. Amrule Ifra Hurmiz, Ime Deshava Malka Livra. So the king's mother said to him, don't get involved. Don't get involved with the Jews. Because everything they ask for, they get given. Yaivlu gets given to them. Amalamai, he says, oh, mummy, what do they get when they ask for it, these Jews I shouldn't get involved with? Ba'on rachme v'atimitra. They pray for rain, and rain comes. So they know the levers of power up there in heaven. Don't get involved with Rava. Amala, he says to his mother, hold on, you're telling me in November they prayed for rain and it rained, so I should leave him alone? That's the rain season. The fact that it happened to rain when they prayed for rain, isn't that impressive? How about right now, in the middle of a hot Middle Eastern June, you get them to pray, and later mitra, see if rain comes in. If rain comes in, I'll leave Rava alone. Otherwise, I'm going to go and pain him for having carried out capital punishment. Shalcha leila Rava, so the message was sent to Rava, Kavin datach vayrachme deleta mitra, you are being ordered on the authority of the king to pray for rain right now on June 25th so that it rains. Vayrachme v'loya mitra, he prayed, rain didn't come, that's not going to look good. So Amalafanav, so he said before God, Ribon shel olam, master of the world, Elokim ba'osnenu shamanu avotenu sifru lanu pol palat b'yamenu b'yakedem. He quoted the verse taken from Tehillim that says, we have heard stories of old that in the ancient days our ancestors would pray and you'd respond. And he said, va'anu ba'inenu lo ra'inu. We don't see anything. Like, why don't we have providence like they used to have? Suddenly, Ata Mitra, it started raining, Ad Shapach, Mirbid Zipurde Digla, until the Tsipore River was flowing out of its banks into the Tigris River, or the gutters were flowing into the river. That is how much rain came. At this point, you would think that the king of Persia would say, all right, these people know what they're doing. But he seems unconvinced. But at that night, Ata Avu Itchazaveh Bechama, that night Rava's father came to him in a dream, and Ramalein said to him, Mikad Mitra Chamesh Maikolehai. Who is it who has the audacity to bother heaven so much that in the middle of June you're going to say to God, bring rain? He doesn't bring rain. And then you kind of tighten the vise and you say, God, in the old days you used to be able to do this stuff. Why don't we see this stuff? At which point God makes it all flow, and his dad comes in a dream and says, what are you doing? That you're pressing God for what? This is where you're giving up your social capital to God in the middle of June. You know, you'll need rain during the sowing season. Why are you doing this? We don't have a response from Rava, but he continues in the dream, Amale, and the father said to him, Shane Duchtech, by the way, don't sleep in your bed tonight, his father says. When you go to sleep tonight, maybe sleep somewhere else. Stuff pillows into your blanket. Shane Duchtai, so he slept somewhere else. The Macha, the next day, Ashkechei de Marashem Puri Besikine, he found his bed full of knife slashes. So he wakes up in the morning and thinks, oh, good I changed beds because someone came after me in the night. The insinuation again could be that demonic forces came to attack him because he pushed heaven, or that the emperor of Persia sent someone after him anyway. But either way, the dream happened, it seems to have influenced him, and he seemed to have power over the rain as well. Rav Papa Gazel Tanit, Mitra, Rav Papa decreed a fast, nothing happened. Chalesh Libe, and this is where you're going to have an inter-sage debate, and this is going to be our third and final case where someone's despair leads to rain, and then we'll have one more story. Rav Papa decreed a fast, Lo Mitra, no rain came. Chalesh Libe, he became weakened. And this is not Chalesh Date, which is you become mentally weak and kind of despair. This is Chalesh Libe, meaning he became physically weak as a result, because of the fast. Saraf Pinka the Daisa, so he had a bowl of porridge. Uvai Rachme, Flo Mitra, Loat Mitra, and rain didn't come. So he's done two things. He decreed a fast, no rain came. He said, look, I'm really hungry, I want to pray, but I'm going to eat. So he has a bowl of porridge, and then he comes to shore. No rain comes. At which point, one of his colleagues makes fun of him, and basically says, oh, maybe have some more porridge. Maybe that will help. So Amalei Rav Nachman by Ushpazdi, Rav Nachman said to him, Isarif ma pincha achrita didaisa mitra. Maybe have another bowl of porridge and it'll start raining. Meaning that you shocked, your prayer didn't work, you sat at home stuffing your face in porridge, and now you come to shul and it doesn't work. Have some more porridge, maybe that'll help. Ichsif, he became, and this can be read either as embarrassed or angry. So having been told by a colleague, like, when you have some more porridge, he became a little bit embarrassed about it. V'chalash date, and here he becomes despairing as a result and says, oh, I just feel terrible. My fast don't work, my prayers don't work, my colleagues think it's my fault. Vata Mitra, and suddenly it started raining. So that was the final story before we get to Chmanid Ben Dosa, who's going to take us to the next dark and green, and then we're going to have another story over the page we'll do next week about Chmanid Ben Dosa that will lead us into the last stuff of the parak. So, Rav Chanan Ben Dosa, Havaka Azul Ba'orcha, he was once walking along the way, Ata Mitra, and it was raining. And this is going to be the final story today, where rain is seen as an inconvenience. It's raining, and this is a big problem, because what happens when it rains and you're walking home? You get wet. Nobody liked that. Am lefanav. So B'chanin Medosa said, before God, Master of the universe, kol ha'ulam kulo benachat v'chanina b'tzar. Says, everybody's happy, because it's raining right now. Everyone's looking outside going, this is great for the crops. I'm standing and I'm getting wet. I'm not happy with this. P'sak Mitra, it stopped raining. Kimata levete, when he got home, Am lefanav ben shalom, he says to God, kol ha'ulam kulo b'tzar v'chanina b'nachat. He says, look, everybody else is in pain, and I was, you know, comfortable. That's not really right. Arthamitra says it starts raining. So basically he had the power to turn the rain on and off. And he recognizes that rain is good for the population, but I don't want to get wet. So when he's outside, he says, you know, off the rain, and gets home and says, put it back on. There's the joke about, I'm sure you're familiar with the Rebbe who, you know, had the power. It was raining everywhere apart from on top of him, raining to the left and the right. But anyone heard this joke? I'll save it for Shabbos. Oh, thank God. We'll save it. I'm going to get the punchline wrong anyway because I haven't thought about it. Suddenly started reading. I'm Rav Yosef. Maya Hanyale. Rav Yosef said, how powerful is Sluta de Kohen Gadol, Mechanin Ben Dosa, the prayer of the high priest when set up against Mechanin Ben Dosa? And now we're going to have a Mishnah that says what was one of the prayers the high priest would say every year on Yom Kippur. In the Holy of Holies, he would say a prayer to God. And among the prayers we're going to have in this Mishnah was, please don't listen to the people on the road. That's going to be part of his prayer. Because the people on the road are always going to say, I don't want rain. It's messy. I need to get around. Just stop it. And that's going to mess up with the economy. So part of the high priest's prayers would be, don't listen to the people on the road. Chanina Mendoza was on the road and God listened. So now he's saying, he seems to be more powerful than the high priest. And that's going to be the conclusion, it seems. So the response of Yosef is, how beneficial is the high priest when it comes to Chanina Mendoza? Did none. It was taught in the Mishnah. He used to pray a small prayer right outside the Holy of Holies. My Matzli, what would he pray? They would say in the name of Rabbi Yehuda, this would be the prayer. I used to pray, may this year be Gushuma, rainy, ushchuna, and hot. Rainy and hot? On a tropical year. The Gemara says, Shchuna ma'alito? Is it heat is good? What are you talking about? Adrabba garinu, too much heat is bad. No, this is what he prayed. Ella, he would say, Im shchuna te gushuma atulula. If it's going to be hot, may it also be rainy, atulula, and dewy, or dewy. And that's a small change, but an important one, where the high priest in his prayer seems to admit, I can't control the temperature. But if it's going to be hot, at least make it rainy and work for the people. And importantly, Va'ali kanis lefanecha tfilat avrei drachim, and do not hear the prayers of the people on the road. Rav Acha b'Rei Rav Masai Mishmei Rav Yehuda, and in the name of Rav Yehuda, they would say this would be the end of the high priest prayer. Lo yavid avid shultim b'Bei Yehuda, may the power not leave from the tribe of Judah, and may Jews not need to get funds from one another, and not be supported by anybody else either, full stop. And it seems like that last line is just an addition. Oh, we were talking about the high priest prayer not being effective against Chanina Mendoza, so I'll tell you how we finish. But this insinuation is quite key, because we've just said the high priest prayer is ineffectual when it comes to Chanina Mendoza. He has the power to say, God, make the rain stop, even the high priest prayed for that. So the fact that the last two prayers that the high priest had was also, please don't make the Jewish people impoverished and please don't let them lose power, should not be read now that we don't have power, we don't have the tribe of Judah in charge of Jewish life, and we are reliant on each other for funds and we're reliant on other people for funds. Israel is deeply reliant on the American foreign policy budget for their security each year. So we are dependent. And the suggestion is, in the same way that the prayers of the high priest isn't always effective, Chanina Mendoza could override it. So don't think that we should read into this bad providence. So the kind of the bottom line on the last daf, which has been instantiated in 13 different stories in different ways with different sages, is that providence has ways of working. We have confidence that it is tied to good behavior, but we don't know how to always trace this. Sometimes parents can be uncompassionate and they seem to succeed in the sense that what they want happens. They don't succeed in their parenting, but they succeed in eliciting God's response. Sometimes sages can call fast days and it doesn't do anything. Sometimes high priests can pray and it doesn't work. But sometimes you can have an anonymous teacher who does good for young misbehaving children and they can elicit God's response. We don't know how it works. We have confidence that God weaves his way and that we've got the freedom to decide how to be good, and the confidence that hopefully that should give us dividends, but not the hubris to think that when we pray, it should work. So really the bottom line, what seems to be the most recurrent pattern that leads to God's response is a thing that appeared three times, which was Chalisha Da'at, which is a sense of humility and recognizing that we don't have power. And when we relinquish power, that seems to be the most powerful manifestation we've had over the last stuff, at least in terms of our outlook. We'll stop there and we'll carry on next week.